Welcome. You're listening to Solveig Space & Musik live from Blitzhuset in Oslo. It's on Radio Rakel FM 99.3, in case you didn't know what you were listening to. And today, as you hear, we're talking English. I have a really cool guest tonight. And welcome to you, Charles Erdem. Do you think I'm good at saying your name?
Yes, that's great, actually.
Very, very impressive.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Okay, and that is fine because you are, as many other guests here, also working with sound, right? Mm-hmm. So sounds are super important. Mm-hmm. Experimental music, sound research, machine music, muscle music, yeah. Co-adaptive systems of improvisation, music that is made by a dancer's movements and muscles and electric signals in the muscles, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
All sorts of things, yeah.
Actually, just when you arrived, I was just sending out Ann-Cecilia Larsen, who has been telling me a lot about how she uses heavy metal to get her to think better. And it also helps her as a nuclear astrophysicist. So, and then you were saying, I just want to connect back to that, because you also said that you listen to music when you need to think.
Yeah.
What kind of music is that?
Well, I totally agree about what she says about metal, because I also do that. Like, I do long walks pretty much every day, and mostly listening to metal. I also, of course, listen to lots of experimental music and sound art and everything. But, like, I think metal has, and especially in my case, extreme subgenres of metal, it's kind of provides some huge power spectrum, I would say, to just make me focus on thoughts. Mm-hmm. Because, like the music in general, the way people think about music is that, you listen love songs or you listen political songs. Usually people expect from music that it bears some kind of meaning about something. But music should not be about meaning only. And I think the point where metal is different from the other kinds of genres is that the meaning is not always very explicit, is not always very clear. It's kind of more abstract. And for instance, like brutal vocal, first of all, makes the lyrics much more abstract, because like you cannot understand it directly, right? So it's mm-hmm. it's completely different than listening to a Bob Dylan song in that sense.
Yeah.
So I think as the music gets less meaningful in that sense, it provides a bigger area for the listener to use their own imagination and their own contribution to what they listen to.
Mm. Yeah, I also had another episode coming out soon with Bergeton, who is from a metal background, but then is making synthwave music. And he also said, why did you call your song that? And then he's just like, yeah, I don't know, I needed to just attach some kind of title to it. And then as we spoke, we found some kind of connections, but it was also this thing that it didn't have, like, there was no explicit storytelling, even though it could contain some kind of like a cinematic aspect or whatever, but there's no concrete story attached to it. Mm-hmm. And I think I have spoken with you one time, and then you also said that you sometimes listen to like weird noise music or synth music with a lot of strange sounds that could surprise you. Like there's no regularity.
Yeah, exactly.
And why was that again?
Well, I really like what John Cage tells about that. He says music can be, at least, like laughter. And laughter doesn't need any meaning in that sense. You can just laugh out of nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And starting from there, I started to listen a lot to my surroundings. First of all,
mm-hmm.
Like the street sounds, the garbage truck, the I don't know, like you name it. And then I started to ask myself, like, because, for instance, it's very common people saying that, oh yeah, this the wind or the bird sounds or like some natural sounds are like music, right? We always mm-hmm. think about that. Yeah. But then I started to ask myself if this is really music. Like, for instance, the wind, mm-hmm. is it music? And then I told myself, well, winds, I don't think winds really care about making music, but it becomes music when the listener starts hearing it as music.
Mm-hmm. It's all in our ears.
Sorry?
It's all in our ears.
It's all in our ears and our intentions. So, mm-hmm. like, if we want something to be music, it becomes a music.
Just listen. Just tune in.
Yes.
This, my voice talking, it's music right now.
Yeah, it can be.
If you just listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's very true and everything. And you also, I remember you also said that it kind of stimulates your mind as well, because it's surprising. I mean, yeah. You can't know what's happening. So you can't just like nod your head to the rhythm or anything, because any sound that comes could just be something mm-hmm. else.
Yeah, there's a huge body of work about like how unpredictabilities and surprise make people provide people more enjoyable kind of experiences.
Mm.
Well, normally in the daily life, unpredictable things may not be that good, but when it comes to aesthetical experiences, then surprises can become really enjoyable actually and pleasant. But you know, there's some kind of fine line between like complete randomness and complete predictability.
Mm-hmm.
So that sweet spot is usually pleasant, I think.
Sweet spot, yeah. Yes. Cool. And do you have any music that is either, like, of the ones that you have brought with you, anything that is heavy or anything that's surprising and mind-stimulating or perhaps reaches some kind of a sweet spot?
Oh, well, I don't know if I can answer the last one. I don't know if which one really addresses the sweet spot, but
mm-hmm.
I think each of them kind of emphasizes the surprise component.
Cool. So should we just start with Jur, or how do you say it?
Yeah, it's Jur, and it's a language called Laz. Laz is an ethnical minority living in the Black Sea region of North Turkey or South Russia, and Jur means Gemini in that language.
Hmm.
And this is kind of it's a duo composition for cello and clarinet. So this is why I put that name. It's the kind of the togetherness
twins.
Of two things. Yeah,
yeah.
Twin clarinet and cello is kind of the interplay of.
Okay, let's have a listen.
Thank you.
So that was Jour by Çağrı Erdem, and thanks for sharing that with us. I had no idea you make contemporary classical music.
Well, it was a little bit some time ago.
Mm.
Yeah, I was mostly in I studied in conservatory, and I was mostly into like a pen and paper composition. And this is from 2008, and I was composing a lot back then. Until I met machines. So nowadays I consider myself still composing, but using code and circuits. But I think I still have the same feeling and approach.
Mm. Yeah. Cool. And you just actually submitted your thesis for the degree PhD.
Yes.
So I think I'd like to hear a little bit about your research. Are you tired of talking about it and writing about it and thinking about it every wake hour?
No, I'm not tired of it, but like, do we have like 3 or 4 hours? In the-
Just start with the elevator pitch.
Yeah.
And we take it from there.
My research and the result, my thesis is about making music with machines in the broader sense. And to be more concrete, I focused on how to play music with artificial intelligence, and to find that, or kind of to explore that, I developed several different interactive music systems, and you know, one of them was the dance project, and another one was focusing on muscle sounds and everything. So like, in each project I kind of explored, okay, so this works and this not work, and like this algorithm works or this algorithm works in that way but not work in that way, and blah blah blah.
What does it mean to work?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. Like it's I cannot really answer that question directly, but it's
you
a very legitimate.
Must have operationalized it somehow.
It's a very legitimate question, because like it kind of pinpoint the huge problem of making a not problem but the challenge of making a music research, because what works or what doesn't work doesn't have a concrete answer, doesn't have a one particular answer, and especially if we're talking about creativity and expression, like everything can be. Can work or not.
And everything can be in the ear of the listener.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, this is why we define some abstract measures. Like, we say, okay, so there has to be this amount of time delay between our input and output. For instance, like, we define this kind of arbitrary measures based on certain empirical evidence. But still, these are kind of supposedly generalized measures, but none of them are actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because like everything can be pleasant or, you know, or not pleasant.
Mm. Yeah. But what do you mean with input and output, for instance?
Yeah, when we're talking about making music with machines, we're talking about something completely different than acoustic instruments, because like what happens with acoustic instruments, our bodily energy or biomechanical energy in the proper terms transforms into sound directly through a physical interface. Like, mm-hmm. Consider the guitar, for instance. You know, we apply an energy on the string, and then in the body of the guitar, sound happens, right? So there is a direct relationship between our input, mm-hmm. So our action and the sound. So which Alexander Jensenius calls action-sound couplings. But when it comes to machines, making music with machines, we define this relationship in a completely arbitrary way. And what I mean by that is that we say, okay, either by programming or by creating circuits, we say, if this kind of action happens, then this kind of sound will be the output. So we design the relationship between input and output, which we call action sound mappings.
Mm, which could be press that button and this happens.
Yeah, exactly. So the mappings can be very meaningful or may not be that meaningful. when we compare to acoustic instruments. So these are completely different way of approaching to making sound in that sense. Mm. Yeah.
Cool. We can talk a lot more about that, but I think that was very, very good. And we might not be done with it just yet, but I'd like to hear some more music.
Sure.
So what do you want to show us?
Well, are we following the...
We might, but we can also change the list. I mean...
Well, I think I like the chronological order because, mm-hmm. like, it's kind of... Before jumping into music, I like to kind of emphasize one point. Like, as you see, like, what I brought as music is, like, they're all quite different from each other. Mm-hmm. And because, like, the way I do music and also the way I do research is kind of different than the traditional way of focusing on a certain discipline and instead kind of jumping around and what I would call wandering around different disciplines and genres and approaches. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like an unending exploration. So mm-hmm. this is why I think that the chronological order expresses well this wandering.
Yeah, you're wandering.
Yes, so I'm wandering and I will be wandering. So the second track in the list was from a band of mine called Percussive. And this is quite a big band, like four guitars and, mm-hmm. And drums and electronics and everything. So it's a composition and what I would call comprovisation because like it's a composition that accommodates improvisations of different musicians. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And it's called Percussive.
Yeah.
And the band is called?
Yeah, the band is Percussive.
Then the band is Percussive, and the title of this track is I Am Not What Happened to Me, I Am What I Choose to Become. Right, so we're listening to the band Percussive and the song I'm Not What Happened to Me, I Am What I Choose to Become. And yeah, so that's maybe something people should remember and take in. Yeah, it sounds like a motto. And it started very sweet, naive, and then it had this huge build-up. And yeah, so thanks for sharing. Chara Erdem, who is then one of the guitar players, I assume, from this band with four guitars. Okay, cool. And some more instruments too. Cool. I actually just also remember that I know that you write some poetry. And I'd like you to read some of it for me and Gusa and the listeners.
Oh, wow. Yeah, first of all, I've been writing probably since before I started to make music. So
before you started to talk, I almost thought you were going to say that.
Yeah, I have quite a few poets in my family who are like published poets. Like I don't really have any musician in my family, but poets and like writers and academicians and so on. So I've been writing for quite some time, but the only thing is that I'm Turkish and I usually write in Turkish, but I really don't have much in English. So
either a translation or one of the newer English ones.
Yeah, actually, I can read one of the newer English ones.
Ooh, exciting!
Better than. Just give me a...
Then you have to read with a very soft voice, get closer to the microphone and stuff like that.
Yeah, like a midnight poetry.
Go on.
Okay. I look at you dreaming and try to guess my dream like a serpent. And its tail, encircling on our bed with worries and fears and the thrill of being loved. Then I stare at these circles and smile, because they look like Luna's slumbering eyes, reflecting light on the rosa of your face, through the amber of your scrambled hairs, like the shapes you draw. It's already past midnight and sweating warm in here. I will turn off the heater now. The ghost song is starting on the radio and I dive in thy arms.
Beautiful. So beautiful.
Yeah.
Is it a love poem?
Yep.
Lucky girl out there maybe listening to this.
Well, very sexy. Yes.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Wonderful. It's actually really cool because I didn't prepare you before you came.
No.
Actually just had the idea when we were sitting here because I remember that you had written some very sexy poetry before. And then
there are much more and much sexier ones.
That
I don't have right now.
Much more sexy, but they were in Turkish, so I heard the translation, and this is much more. Well, you have become a romantic person, finally.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who guessed that?
Yeah, right. Because I know that you also have some ideas about feelings and the body.
Yeah.
Because we have had a conversation previously when you said you kind of said there is no such a thing, like there is no kind of metaphysical level of feelings. It's just all the body, basically. Or am I right? Maybe you can explain what you mean and if you still think the same or if you have become more romantic.
Well, yeah, that's a tricky question because what I said doesn't really reject the idea of spirit and spirituality. Mm-hmm. And I always find myself a little bit in spiritual in some sense. But I still think that, you know, the body is a kind of body and spirit. These are like inseparable, separable things.
Yeah.
So like the spirit, what we call a spirit, to my belief and understanding, is an embodied concept, like the mind.
Yeah.
So like, also like in my research and in my understanding, for instance, brain cannot be taught separately from the body.
Mm-hmm. Body mind.
So is separate. So we cannot really think about separate something completely different than the body. So it's kind of very, very intertwined.
Yeah, it's not very, I mean, these ideas are not like, they're not radical or anything. I mean, it's just, is it what you call like embedded cognition?
Yeah, embodied cognition. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what it's called. And like in the more radical takes of it, like we can say the mind is embodied, is enacted, is embedded, and it is extended. Like yeah, we can go through in details of all these things, but
yeah
so I long story short, I think body is a very, very important aspect of all these concepts, including spirit, low, hate, whatever. Like all these things, we cannot really think any of these separately from the body. That's what I said.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But what happens then, like if we don't like our bodies?
If we don't like our bodies.
Yeah, and then we're trying to like,
to like it's a little bit different, because like it doesn't have anything to do about liking or not liking, because like it's, you live with your body, and when you don't like your body, you're still not liking your body with your body. So your body is still involved in not liking it.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't change what I say. Like it's your body is still a very strong aspect of your dislike.
Yeah.
It's not about liking or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is.
It's a prison.
Well, yes, in some sense, that's true.
Yeah, we're locked in this mortal shell.
But, you know, there's a problem with this perspective too, because like it still implies that there's something different than our body, which is locked inside of it.
Yeah.
But I think there is nothing else than our body.
Yeah.
So we cannot really think differently, these two things.
And do you think it makes you more romantic or less romantic to have this unity of mind and body?
Well, with all the bodily reactions I have, like it makes me certainly more romantic.
Yeah.
I remember attending like a yoga class a couple of years ago, and the yogi, the teacher, reminded us that we're also our toes, our little toe, it's also us. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a moment just, holy shit, that's weird. I totally forgot about that for a couple of years.
Actually, like very connected to this, like this body and mind thing has been a huge debate in the field of artificial intelligence, and like in starting from the inception of AI, like which is around the 50s. So this is discussed a lot, and the people from the more embodiment stance, especially one researcher called Brooks, like he normally, the AI researchers always try to model the brain. So they assume that our brains are the main computers, our main machines that kind of manages everything. So they try to recreate this computing in with the machines, right? Mm. So, but like there is this other perspective which says that no, brain is just part of the body. Mm-hmm. So we need to look not to the top part, which is brain, but we need to look to the bottom part. And then these some researchers started to model the machines by taking insects as the model, because they say that if we can recreate how insects interact within each other artificially, then maybe we can reach out how humans also interact within each other.
But I don't understand, why did they go to the insects and not, for instance, to your little toe?
Because insects are it's first of all very much easier to observe.
Right.
Like you can put in a controlled environment, you can put like dozens of insects and you can really measure how they interact with each other. But when it comes to toe, it's like it's part of a bigger structure. And it's really much harder to follow how it works within that structure.
I guess we are more complex systems.
Of course we are.
But this limit of what is the body and not the body is also not black and white. I mean, like, I think 2 kilos of every person or something, like several kilograms of your body weight is just bacteria. And they are also, you need them in order to survive. And I mean, if you peel off your skin, you take a face care or something, you drop off the outer dermis and then, oh, suddenly what was part of me is no longer part of me and my brain still works. And like, where are these limits? Is it the neural system and the organs that are crucial, or is it like, in fact, everything that is still attached to you? Is your hair part of you? Is there, like, where are these borders of
Based on this this perspective that I just said, this I listed like embodied, enacted, embedded, and extended. And based on this fourth one, the extended one, actually not even our hairs, but also the tools we use are part of our cognitive system.
Right. I can see where we're going now.
Yeah.
To cyborgs.
Exactly. So what
your music
this paper,
system.
This paper or this bottle of drink or this glass, this not even mentioning the electronic things.
Are you
everything.
Part of me now that I'm touching your knee?
Well, if you spend enough time with me, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Hello home there, Chara's girlfriend. Okay, cool. So let's talk more about this, your extended body, which is then some of your instruments. And then we can also listen to some of the music.
Sure. Well, which one? Talking about the extended body thing or listening to music?
Maybe we can listen a little bit first and then we talk about it.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good plan. Yeah. So what are we listening to?
Well, this is... the track on the list, actually, it's a very special one for me because this was a composition assignment back when I was doing my master's. And the composition assignment was making a composition about a soundscape recording. And around the same time, my aunt died. And I decided on recording the entire funeral process of my aunt. But what we did, I say we because like I had some partners in crime in doing this, we placed the microphone in the coffin.
Wow.
And the microphone kind of traveled from the place where the corpse was washed until it was buried. So the composition is kind of based on the sounds processed by, you know, by electronic
but
means.
Is it still buried? I mean, is
no,
it
no, no. Like while right before it was buried, we took it out of the coffin. So it's a little bit.
But on top of the coffin or inside?
Inside of the coffin.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're gonna hear, and you have called this piece "Hell of a Coffin."
Yeah.
Thank you.
While we are listening to this A Hell of a Coffin piece, which is processed field recordings from inside the coffin of your aunt.
Right now the praying is in the house, because like the corpse comes to house at some point, like before the funeral.
Right.
So right now it's in the house.
Mm-hmm. And there, it has now been washed and prayed for?
It's been washed already. Now it's getting in the car.
Oh. Hmm. Is this with the music in the car or something?
No, like, of course, it's not all... It doesn't follow the timeline exactly as it is. Like, it kind of mixes the other sounds recorded during, how people expressed their, like, some people cry, some people say that, oh yeah, she was a really nice person and blah blah. So it also contains this kind of recordings on top of.
Yeah. How did you process this? Sounds cool.
How did I process this?
Yeah, what did you do with the sound?
Well,
do you remember?
Well, lots of time modulation, first of all, using lots of delays, and delays are kind of my favorite stuff. Right now it came to the bury, like you can hear the
digging.
Yeah, the digging, and the hoca praying while it's being digged.
Mm.
Shall we?
Wow, amazing.
That's quite the composition. Decomposition? No, sorry. Yeah.
Something like that.
It was a horrible wordplay.
Yeah, well, but I think that's kind of accurate.
Did anyone know about this project during that? Did you have to sort of keep it?
That's an important aspect, because like normally it's really it can create huge problems. This is why I had some partners in crime, because like putting the microphone in the coffin and taking it out, it had to be in a very discreet way, because you can get, I wouldn't say like killed, but you can get really beaten for doing this. Like it's kind of, because it's kind of, it can be considered as sacrilege, you know, to, you know. For instance, while in the washing part, since it's a female corpse, it's only females can get in the washing area.
Yeah.
So I gave the microphone to my cousin, and while it was recording, she dropped the microphone. And then the woman who was washing the corpse made a scene, and she came and she like, "What is this?" and blah 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 blah. And then like my mother and like some other relatives, I had to, you know, do something about it. And like they said like, yeah, the kids are so sad, so they just wanted to make a memory and blah, blah, blah. So like,
yeah.
So it was not easy, but also like some people from the family knew, but like they found out there. They didn't knew before. Except my two partners are in crime, like two cousins of mine.
Yeah.
They knew beforehand. But other than that, you know, like for instance, my mother learned about this there. She kind of...
Was she okay with it?
No. Well, she was fine with it because like she knows me. But still, it wasn't, you know...
It's not the easiest concept to explain, I guess.
Exactly. Like, because like you're like... We're making music here. With the corpse. Yes. Why not? You know?
It's, yeah. Well, I'm glad you did it.
Yeah. So it's just, it was a fun project.
Great. Oh, and we were going to talk more about extensions when you are, extended the bodies in music, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a huge concept, but basically, whatever tool we use is considered as an extension of our body. Like it can be a calculator, or it can be an acoustic instrument, or any kind of instrument.
Body, mind. Mind, body.
Yes, mind is embodied. So it's embodied mind, basically. And whatever tool we use is kind of extending that mind. When we use an instrument, it becomes kind of an extension of our cognition, because we start to think and act and perceive with that tool, basically. But like it's not the commonly accepted approach. Like many traditional cognition researcher would say that no, it's just a tool. It, of course, influences the way the brain works, but it's still a tool, and it doesn't have anything to do with the brain. So, like, there is no commonly accepted way of thinking it, but, like, I kind of like to think everything as part of extensions of ourselves.
Mm. And sometimes you have to spend more time with it before it becomes an extension.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's,
Okay. And that could be also by having a conversation and thinking together. Is that also some kind of an extension of your mind?
Well, maybe. Well, for instance, I think it like it can maybe happen with the people you know very well, and with the people you spend a lot of time with in a certain environment.
Yeah.
Like, let's say if you had a garage, studio garage, like and where you played with your fellow with your guitar player for many years, then maybe at some point you can start thinking music based on that guitar playing in that environment, because the it's not only about extension, but also your cognition is embedded. So you can think based on that environment in the garage. So the amplifier he uses or you use, the kind of guitar, even the kind of string, guitar string you use, is part of the way you think, you make sense of everything. So...
Does this also have anything to do with like the way that, for instance, a string quartet could be playing very, very well together because they without even looking at each other, just by like Simon Höfting's research, he was in another episode.
Yeah, this is very, very much connected to that. But like in these in these cognitive approaches, in this, like, this is very much of a concern of this field called phenomenology, which is basically like a...
Yeah, that's his approach.
A philosophical field, which where I'm not an expert of, so I really don't want to claim anything concrete.
Yeah, but it's great to just see that it's from another angle and...
But yes, this is very much connected to that.
Yeah, part of the same phenomenon.
Yeah.
Awesome. And... I guess we have some music that can kind of work to also, how do I say it, illustrate this?
Yeah.
I mean, something that you have developed, actually, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Kavi you're talking. Yeah, Kavi is an AI model that, like, AI-based music instrument or music making thing that I developed, and it tracks the player's motion, and what I mean by motion is the muscle movement of the forearm, and create new forearm motion based on that. So I make this analogy to explain Kavi is like you're playing your guitar and someone else is just tweaking the effects pedals. It's the basic idea is that, but that instead of someone else tweaking the pedals, it's an AI model that tweaks the pedals. Yeah. So.
And does this also have to do with this thing that you said earlier about like instead of action... what did they call it? Action sound coupling.
Action sound coupling.
You're kind of trying to create that action sound coupling as well by taking muscle signals?
I wouldn't call it action sound coupling because like you cannot create action sound coupling.
You're mapping it. That's what they said. But did you try to make it feel a bit like, I mean, like for instance, if they hit the guitar harder, is that going to make a bigger sound?
I try to make AI consider human body more because like the current state of AI, like in this 21st century, in the times we live, the field of AI is making like fascinating work. But the biggest problem is that it certainly doesn't consider body and environment and physicality as much as it should. So what I'm trying to do is to interact with it using body more than abstract concepts and symbols. So that's how I can explain it.
And that's also part of this Kavi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kavi tracks your body movement and creates new body movement to make music with you.
Yeah, and it's called, and it's Kavi for co-adaptive audiovisual
instrument.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, let's listen a bit to some of the music made using this Kavi. And it's a collaboration then between the drummer and improviser Dag Erik Nedal Andersen and I guess Kavi.
Yeah, Kavi, yeah.
yeah, so I also wanted to say that while we listen to this, I want to thank you, Char Erdem, for being part of Solas Pesa Music tonight. Time is unfortunately up. Our conversation is not. But yeah, I hope that people have enjoyed this hour. And yeah.
It was a pleasure for me. Thank you for inviting and hosting me very well. Yeah.
Great.
Thank you. And thank you. Yeah.
Hello, back again. This is an important announcement. A wrong musician has been announced. This is actually Christian Winter, who is a guitar player and improviser who is improvising with Kaveh. So, yeah. You have to put me back on air. We are changing our minds. Some are here, sitting in our bodies and changing our mind. We want to hear some of Dag Erik's part too. So Guse is going to skip right into a part where the drummer Dag Erik Nedal Andersen plays. And this was a small part of Christian Winter's improvisation. And he also has a separate episode. So look it up. And thank you once more.